Good morning and welcome to Northeast Christian Church. Before we get started with the message today, I thought I'd share a few photos with you from our cross-country ski trip this weekend. Friday afternoon, several of us left here in Grand Junction and headed down to Ouray, Colorado. Last year we went up on the Mesa, decided to change it up this year because, to be honest, I really like the hot springs in Ouray. And so we went down there, and Friday evening we had dinner together and then we played a game. And I'll just tell you, I won 21 points. There were 11 of us playing the game. I won with 21 points. The next closest person had 11, and it went down from there. It was the game of Balderdash, which is all about bluffing and lying. So don't know if that's a good thing or not. But either way, we had a great time. We went skiing in Ironton, Colorado, and scenery down there, very beautiful. It was a great day. You can keep going there, Kim. There's a video floating around out there for any happen to be on Facebook, and you know, it shows me falling down on the ground and struggling to get up. But if you'll notice in the video, it's almost like a whiteout, almost blizzard conditions. So these photographs that show it to be a very clear and nice day, I'm not sure what that's about. But either way, we had a great time in Ouray and got home safe yesterday afternoon after spending a few hours warming back up in the hot springs. So that being said, this last week, had to go to a local ski shop here in town to take care of renting equipment for the cross-country ski trip. And while I was there, you know, met a young man behind the counter, and one thing led to another and began sharing with him the gospel message. And, you know, believe it or not, you know, he's actually here this morning with us. And I just, you know, actually, no. Just kidding. Sharon, I appreciate the applause. But there for a minute, there might have been a few of you thinking, that's Seth, you know, he just shares Jesus with anybody and everybody wherever he goes. You know, why would you think that that's special? I mean, we're called to be witnesses, right? We're called to go and tell people about Jesus, and that takes, you know, some courage on our part. That takes us being open and honest about our faith. But here's the point. Why is it so special that I went and shared, you know, about Jesus with someone at a ski shop that I just met this week? My whole point with this series that we're in, Life on Mission, is about our life being on mission, about sharing the gospel message, sharing about Jesus, sharing life with people that we already know. I mean, yes, I it's great that we go to Walmart or Charter. Those people need Jesus, right? No, sorry. Sorry, Carol. But, you know, we go places, it's great, it's wonderful that we tell them about the Lord and we share who we are and we share our faith. But my encouragement to you is focus. Start with the people that you know, that you already have a relationship with. Your family, your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers. Those are the people that I believe God has put in your path. Different than anyone else, different than my path, different than someone else's path. God has put those people in your path. Relationship. Life on Mission is about being in relationship with people. Mark chapter 5, verses 18 through 20. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. Go home. Spend time with your family, with your friends, your coworkers. Tell the people that you already know about Jesus. Start there. Well, Life on Mission, we're in action step number 3. We started out talking about connecting with people. A lot of times as Christians, we get to a point in life where we have very little contact, some of us, with people who don't know Jesus. Is that fair to say sometimes? So we need to see people around us that don't know Jesus. We need to find ways to connect with them, our family, our friends, our coworkers, people at the gym, people at wherever we're going, and connect with them. Then we talked about serving them. If people are going to listen to us, if they're going to hear what we have to say, they have to know first that we care about them. You know the saying, they're not going to care what we know until they know that we care about them. Serving people, that they would believe that we love them, that we care about them. And then today we're going to be talking about sharing. There's a quote that's floated around through the years, and I've used this several times. Perhaps you've heard it, but it's attributed to Francis of Assisi, St. Francis of Assisi. Preach the gospel at all times, and if necessary, use words. Now, that's a great quote. I mean, I've used it in the right context. It's a good thing. I mean, people should know by my life, by my actions, that I'm a Christian, that I am a follower of Christ. They should know because of my life. I mean, if it's a good news for me, it should be good news for my family, for the whole neighborhood. It ought to be very clear, very apparent. Well, I think another reason that sometimes we like this quote, for some of us who grew up in the church, maybe you've heard this terminology before called going witnessing. Anybody remember that? Going witnessing or going calling, that sort of thing. Going witnessing, it usually meant that it was door-to-door evangelism. You would go cold turkey, and it was kind of like trick-or-treating, but in reverse. You know, instead of getting candy, you were giving candy, except instead of giving candy, you were giving black licorice. Or at least that's kind of the way I see it sometimes. Some people actually like black licorice. Other people think black licorice tastes like tar that's been cut in strips and twisted together. Some people don't like it. But sometimes that's the way witnessing is seen. The word witness in Scripture, it's a noun. It's not just a verb. It's not something that you do. It's who you are. A witness is who you are. Jesus said in Acts 1:8, "You will be my witnesses in all Jerusalem and in Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth." Witnesses, it's something that you are, not that you will do witnessing. And so we come back to this St. Francis of Assisi quote. And, you know, it's great. It works quite well, except for two key details. First of all, there's no record of Francis of Assisi actually ever saying this. It gets attributed to him, but we haven't figured out that he actually did. The second thing is, I'm not sure he would have just said that in that time period. Because it is necessary to use words. It is important. It's required to use words. Ed Stetzer wrote recently in an article, he wrote this, saying, "Preach the gospel, when necessary, use words, is a lot like saying, feed the hungry, when necessary, use food. Both are silly. When people, they need bread, and the bread of life, so proclaim it out loud to people without Christ." Of course we need to speak. The problem is, you know, people are not going to guess their way into heaven. They're going to need to know the reason why you are the way you are. The reason that you have the hope that is within you. That's what Peter said. You could seem peaceful to people because you meditate in the moonlight. Or you could seem peaceful to people because you fully embrace these new Colorado laws. You could seem peaceful to people for a lot of different reasons. But they don't know why you have that hope until you share that with them. They don't know why you have the love, the joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. They don't know why you have that unless you tell them. And so being a witness is not just about yelling about Jesus to everybody you meet. It's not just about slapping a fish sticker, bumper sticker on the back of your car and driving around. Paul in Romans chapter 10. Romans 10, 13 and 14. "For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. How then can they call on the one who they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one in whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? And how can they preach unless they're sent? As it's written, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news." We have to tell people. How are they going to hear? How are they going to know unless we tell them? There's a story about a little Christian kid who was talking to another friend of his and talking to him about Jesus and how things went. And the other boy said, "So what you're saying is if I want to go to heaven, I need to believe in Jesus. I need to follow Jesus, right?" And he said, "Yes, yes. So all I have to do is to follow Jesus and then I can get into heaven." And the kid says, yeah, And he said, So if my mom wants to go to heaven, all she has to do is to follow Jesus, right? And he said, "Yes. And if you don't want her there, don't tell her." It's really that simple. Acts 1:8, "You will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth." That's what we're talking about, being witnesses for Jesus. mentioned this quote a couple times now, but Peter Drucker says, you have to ask yourself two questions every day. What business are we in? And how's business? We're in the witness business. We have one job. Got a few more of those pictures to share with you. And by the way, if you find some or come across some clever ones, feel free to email them to me. You had one job. Strap the four-wheeler into the pickup truck. It's not going anywhere with the pickup truck, but you had one job. Made in China with the American flag right above it. You had one job. Blue bin on a red bin. You had one job. I'm not sure if anyone's going to be sitting in that park bench. You had one job. And that's, you know, neon. That's expensive stuff. Spell the word open right. You had one job. College of Architecture and Planning. The C is on the far, you know, it's on the brick wall. Now, I'll tell you, I looked this one up. It's actually a Snopes thing. It's not for real. But I still thought it was pretty clever. Somebody did a good job. You had one job. Put the milk in the bowl, not underneath the bowl. Especially if we're going to put it on our cereal boxes. You had one job. And our job, our mission, should we choose to accept it, is to be witnesses. We're in the witness business. Paul is very specific in Acts chapter 20, verse 24. However, I consider my life worth nothing to me, if only I may finish the race and complete the task the Lord Jesus has given me. What is that task? It's the task of testifying to the gospel of God's grace, being witnesses. That was Paul's mission. That's our mission. But I want to take us back to a few months into the new church. Acts chapter 8. We've been talking a lot through the book of Acts lately, and this is where I want to start our time together, our main core time together this morning. There's this guy named Philip, and Philip, he gets to be one of the first witnesses for Jesus. We have a record of it. Acts chapter 8, verses 4 through 6. Those who had been scattered preached the word wherever they went. Philip went down to a city in Samaria and proclaimed the Christ there. When the crowds heard Philip and saw the miraculous signs he did, they all paid close attention to what he said. Now remember last week, Samaria is this place where they have really bad theology and the Gracists, they don't like them very much, right? And so Philip already is taking after Jesus' idea and he's saying, hey, I'm going to go to a place where the tax collectors and the prostitutes are. I'm going to go to the country where it's least comfortable for people to be, for people that know God and fear God to be. A place where good Jews would never go. That's where I'm going to go. Following Jesus already. And when Philip went to Samaria, notice what it says. It says they paid close attention to what he said. But they also saw what he did. When they heard and saw, when they heard his words and saw his signs, his mouth was congruent with his hands, his words were in line with what his actions were. And that resulted in them wanting to hear his message. That's why, again, relationship is so important. I mean, if I walk into Charter or Walmart or the ski shop or somewhere one time and I talk with someone about Jesus, that's great. But that person doesn't know if my life matches my actions. They don't know if the words coming out of my mouth match my life. But your neighbors do. Your coworkers do. Your family members do. And what these people saw in Philip was something that was real and genuine. The key to being a witness for Jesus is living a life that people want to know more about. Living a life that people, they beg to ask the question, well, why are you this way? So of course, preach the gospel at all times with your life. I mean, I completely agree with that part. Well, here's where I'm going with this. A good witness has good hands. And I'll explain this in just a moment. They have good hands. They have good deeds. Things that they do already. That's where we need to start. We need to have good acts, good actions. Acts chapter 8, verse 26 and 27. Now an angel of the Lord said to Philip, go south to the road, the desert road that goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. So he started out, and on his way he met an Ethiopian eunuch, an important official in charge of all the treasury of Candace, queen of the Ethiopians. This man had gone to Jerusalem to worship. So here goes Philip again to unlikely people. An Ethiopian eunuch. Here was a black, wealthy, non-Christian. Just the opposite of Philip. And Philip recognizes he needed to connect with this man. I mean, that's the job of the person on mission, recognizing this is who I need to connect with. Very different than a sign that someone once saw in a convent in California. Absolutely no trespassing. Violators will be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. Signed, the Sisters of Mercy. No, Sisters of Mercy, you don't get it. That's not how it works. We're supposed to connect with people. You have one job, to connect with people. Luke 5:31, Jesus said, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, it's the sick. We're to connect with those kinds of people. Well, watch Philip's approach here. Verse 27 through 30, again. So he started out, and on his way he met an Ethiopian eunuch, an important official in charge of all the treasury of Candace, queen of the Ethiopians. This man had gone to Jerusalem to worship. On his way home, he was sitting in his chariot reading the book of Isaiah the prophet. The Spirit told Philip, go to that chariot and stay near it. Then Philip ran up to the chariot and heard the man was reading Isaiah the prophet. Do you understand what you're reading? Philip asked. Down to verse 35. Then Philip began with that very passage of Scripture and told him the good news about Jesus. The second key quality of a good witness. A good witness has good hands, but also good eyes. He has good eyes. Well, what do I mean by that? Well, we need to observe. I mean, the real problem sometimes with the old idea of witnessing was timing. Somebody shows up on your door on Saturday morning, not only am I probably not going to see any evidence of Jesus in their life when I'm listening to them, but I don't know about you, but I don't necessarily want to talk about deep spiritual stuff on Saturday morning. When I was growing up, Saturday morning was for cartoons, right? Oftentimes now it's for yard work or biking or other things with family. I don't necessarily want to have a deep spiritual conversation on a Saturday morning. To be honest with you, which hopefully I'm always honest with you, right? But actually, anytime someone comes to my house, I'm not usually sitting around praying, gosh, Lord, I wish you would send someone to my door who had a different religious perspective than me so I could just give away a couple hours of my time talking with them, right? Jesus said in Matthew 4, I'll make you fishers of men. If you want to catch fish, you have to go during fishing season, right? You have to go when the fish are biting, right? And normally that's early in the morning, which is probably why I'm not a regular fisherman. Timing is important. If you want to fish for people, you're going to have to develop a sense of timing. And Philip had this. I mean, obviously he had a very strong advantage. God told him to go there. God told him this is the right time to go and speak to that man. And so does God still do that? Does he still prompt us? Does he still nudge us? Does he still urge us? Does he still talk to us in that way? And I want to encourage you this morning, it may not be God shouting down from heaven through an angel, but if we live our life under God's direction, we're going to sense the Spirit's prompting. We're going to know, hey, I need to go and I need to talk to that person. It's green light, it's good to go. It's time to share. I also believe that we'll be prompted when it's not okay. This is not good timing right now to talk about this. Listen again to Paul. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 17. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. We have to have wisdom when we're going to be sharing with people, to use the direction, the insight that God gives us. Well, how did Philip deal with this Ethiopian? He showed him respect. He didn't offend his religious beliefs. He simply took the Bible and he showed him Jesus. I love how this next verse is paraphrased in the Living Bible. 1 Corinthians 9:22 says this, whatever a person is like, I try to find common ground with him so that he will let me tell him about Christ and let Christ save him. Whatever a person's like, I try to find common ground with him so that he will let me tell him about Christ and let Christ save him. That's what Paul said. But a good witness is not just about your mouth and telling people. There are other parts. A good witness has good hands, good actions, good acts that he's doing, good eyes. He has discernment. He also has good ears. I would argue this is probably the most important part. Again, Acts chapter 8. Verse 30, Then Philip ran up to the chariot, heard the man reading Isaiah the prophet, and asked, "Do you understand what you're reading?" Jesus did this all the time, asking questions and then listening. I mean, it's very simple, very profound. When you ask someone a question, you're saying to them, "I care about you. I want to hear what you have to say. I want to hear what's going on in your life. I value you." It's a good way to understand the responsiveness of the person that you're talking to by asking them questions. So if you're talking to a coworker, I mean, they probably have pictures in their cubicle somewhere. It's, "Hey, tell me about your family. Tell me about this picture here. What's going on here?" Or a neighbor, you know they've been gone for 2 weeks. Maybe you say, "Hey, how'd your vacation go? What did you guys do?" Start talking to them. Ask them questions. Because here's what happens. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. As you begin talking to someone and getting to know them, one question is going to lead to another. And if God wants you to talk to that person, He may very well open the door wide for an opportunity to talk about Jesus. I have a question I use a lot. I'm going to share it with you this morning. I'm going to give you a trade secret here if you aren't already aware of this. I'll put it on the screen in just a moment. You may want to write it down because it's pretty good, okay? But this is a question I use a lot. "Hey, how you doing?" That's it. "How you doing? Hey, how are you? What's going on in life right now? How you doing?" And you know, a lot of times people say, "Oh, I'm doing good, doing fine." But over time, after a while, sooner or later, they're probably going to say, "You know, I'm not doing so well. Well, hey, you got my cell number. Hey, here's my number. Why don't we grab coffee on Tuesday?" And then, you know, the rest is history. Most people in the world today come to the Lord because of a friend. And so are you going to be a friend or not? Someone once said the best evangelistic tools that we have are on the side of our head, our ears. We need to listen. We need to be available. Philip ran up alongside. He asked the man if he understood the Bible, and he figured out how to turn this conversation into something spiritual. I think the temptation for us sometimes is to not talk about the subject of God. The temptation for us is to talk about the Broncos or to talk about, you know, politics or what's going on in the Middle East or something else. But at some point, if you're friends with somebody, your conversation is probably going to lead you down a spiritual path. We have to go down that road. And so the reason that most people don't want to go down that road is because they don't want to have to answer some of the tough questions. Maybe they're afraid, "Seth, I just don't know enough. I'm not going to have the right answers. I'm afraid of something they may ask." Well, now we're going to segue over to John chapter 9. John chapter 9, the blind man, probably, in my opinion, one of the best witness stories in the Bible, period. John chapter 9, verses 6 and 7. "Having said this," this is Jesus he's talking about, "having said this, he spit on the ground, made some mud with the saliva, and put it on the man's eyes. 'Go,' he told him, 'wash in the pool of Siloam.'" This word means sent. "So the man went and washed and came home seeing." Go to the pool and wash. The one called sent. I mean, we all probably need to go to the pool called sent and learn how to be witnesses, right? But either way, here's what's going on. Here's what's great about this. Would have been an opportunity for the blind man to bow out, right? But that's not what he does. Verses 7 through 9. "Go," he told him. Well, I'll continue. "So the man went and washed and came home seeing. His neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, 'Isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg?' Some claimed that he was. Others said, 'No, he only looks like him.'" Isn't that great? I mean, "No, he only looks like him. But he himself insisted, 'I am the man.'" He insisted. I mean, he had an opportunity right there to bow out and say, "No, I'm not that guy." He could have, you know, grabbed a hold of an accent of sorts. He could have switched to Spanish language. He could have even said, "Yeah, how about those Rockies?" You know, opportunity to bow out, and he didn't. He said, "No, I am the man. That was me." Remember Rick Warren's statement. Well, why would you be left here after you become a Christian unless it is to tell people about Jesus? That's our mission. What business are we in? How's business? But don't worry, that's not what happens with the blind man. Verses 10 and 11. How then were your eyes opened? They demanded. And he replied, the man they called Jesus made some mud and put it on my eyes. He told me to go to Siloam and wash, so I went and washed, and then I could see. Notice there's something important here. He doesn't, you know, try and become the theologian. He doesn't say, well, the incarnate Son of God came to earth and he has the power from on high because although he is fully human, he is also fully God and he graciously chose to heal my infirmities. That's not what he does. He doesn't try to explain exactly what happened. He just states the facts. Where is this man? They asked him. I don't know, he said. And that's a phrase I'm going to keep coming back to. And I hope you get it. I hope you embrace it. Because at times, we may not know. And he doesn't try and answer the questions that he didn't have the answers to. But again, many times, people are afraid to share their story because they're afraid of where that's going to lead and they're afraid of the hard questions. What about suffering in life? Where is God when it hurts? What about creation? Was it a 7 literal days? Which came first, the chicken or the egg? You know, those types of things. What happened to the dinosaur? What about the flood? What about the return of Jesus? What are things going to be like then? They're afraid of the tough questions. Practice this with me. I don't know. Can we say it together? I don't know. Sometimes it's okay to say, I don't know, to answer a question that you don't have the answer to. Chapter 9, verse 24. A second time, they summoned the man who had been blind. Give glory to God, they said. We know this man is a sinner. And here it comes, verse 25. He replied, whether he is a sinner or not, I don't know. One thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see. Now, besides what is recorded here, I want you to see beyond that what's going on here. Whether he's a sinner or not, I don't know. One thing I do know, I was blind and now I can see. Perhaps one of the best evangelistic answers I've come across, there's a lot of stuff I don't know. But what I do know is I used to not be able to see and now I can see. I used to not understand this. I used to not be able to see clearly, but now I can see. And so when you're talking with someone, when you're sharing with people, you just ask them the questions and answer the best that you can. And if you get to a point that you don't understand or don't know, you can say, I don't know. But there's something you do know. You do know what Jesus did for you. Bill Hybels is a preacher at a church in the northwest suburb area of Chicago, and he wrote a book called Walk Across the Room. He reminds us that in that book that every person alive today has a story, and your story fits into God's story, His bigger story. So every single person has a story. You have a story. And I don't care if you grew up in church like I did, and maybe you look at your story and think, well, it's not really a good story. You know, everyone has a story to tell, and we need to learn how to tell our story. It doesn't need to be a dramatic story. It doesn't need to be somebody else's story. We don't need to exaggerate or change the facts. It's your story. It's your people. You've been intentional about connecting with them. You've been intentional about serving them. It's time to be intentional about sharing with them your story and what God has done in your life. Well, imagine, you know, one day you're sitting around with a neighbor or a coworker or a friend and they just ask you the question, tell me why you follow Jesus. What would you tell them? Do you know how you would respond? If someone asked you the question, tell me why you follow Jesus. What if we'd already prayed about it? What if we'd already thought about it and prepared in advance what we were going to say? And so that when we tell our story, the focus is really just this. What is different in my life from when Christ became involved and now? It's really that simple. What was life like BC and now AD? What was life like before Christ came into my life? You don't have to be a theologian. You don't need to tell everybody everything, just the before and the after. And so this week, if you haven't done so already, if you can't really easily answer that question, I want to challenge you this week to do so. Sit down, take out a piece of paper, and here's the key, in 100 words or less. Elevator version, because that's what it takes sometimes. What was life like before Jesus came into my life, and what is it like now? You know what? There's a lot of things I don't know, but I know that I used to not be able to see, and now I can see. If you want some help, you can email it to me at mystory@northeastchristian.org, and we'll help you with that. Or on your bulletin, if you don't have email, if you'll make a note on the back of your bulletin, on that little flap thing, and drop it in the box, we'll help you if you'd like help with that. Maybe there are things that you need help, say, you know, you probably don't need to include that, or maybe you should include this. We can help you craft your story. But it's simple. I was self-destructive, and now I'm healthy. I was guilty for all my sins, and now I'm not. I'm free. I was afraid, but now I'm at peace. I was without hope, but now I believe. I have a hope for eternity. 100 words or less. Not the Declaration of Independence, but just your story. What was life like before Jesus, and what is life like now? And maybe you're early in your relationship with Jesus. Perhaps it's the best time for you to start working on this. And maybe you're thinking, well, you know, Seth, my life is not a shining example of, you know, a witness for Jesus Christ. Does anyone want to stand up and say, my life is a shining example of a witness for Jesus Christ? We all have our stuff. But take a moment this week and prayerfully think about your story, what God has done in your life, and how you could share that with your family member or neighbor or friend or coworker, whoever that is. Here's my life. Now maybe you're sitting in the room today and you don't have a relationship with Jesus Christ. This might even be a great opportunity for you to say, here's my life. I wonder what life could be like if Jesus were involved. In fact, if that's your situation, before you leave here, I want to encourage you to turn to the person next to you and say, hey, why do you follow Jesus? Maybe it'll help them get started on their 100-word, you know, statement. Maybe it's time for you to make a decision. Jade Knavel, 12 years old, she's been coming here for several years now. Last week, she decided it was time to give her life to Jesus. In fact, we baptized her at the end of second service. She's been, as I put it last week, bothering me for some time. Seth, I'd like to get baptized. I want to make Jesus the Lord of my life. And so we did that. 12 years old. So what is our excuse? What is your excuse? Some of you have been doing the church thing for a long time and have never made Jesus the Lord of your life, have never been baptized. Perhaps today is the day. Well, what witness or business are we in? We're in the witness business. Doesn't say defense attorney. It doesn't say judge. It just says witness. A witness is somebody that tells what has happened to them, tells something they have seen. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of Him who called you out of darkness into His wonderful light. Now, I don't know a lot of things, but I do know that I couldn't see, and now I'm in the light. I can see very clearly. Tried to use this house analogy for the last few weeks. And, you know, when we connect with people, it's kind of like the backyard. Come over for a barbecue, hang out, let's, you know, just spend a little time together connecting. And then this idea of serving them, they come in the house and maybe they hang out for a little while. You give them a Band-Aid, let them use the restroom. You just help meet some practical needs. And then sharing with them. Where do the conversations happen in the house? Oftentimes around the dinner table, right? Hey, come over here into the kitchen. Let's sit down. Let's have a cup of coffee. Let's talk for a while. How's life? What's going on? Sometimes that's uncomfortable, but we need to remember our compassion has got to be greater than our comfort if this mission is going to happen. I'll wrap up with this. Donald Miller, he wrote a great book called Blue Like Jazz, and he talked about a friend of his who came to faith. And she became a Christian because of her friend Nadine, and this is what she said. The thing I loved about Nadine was that I never felt like she was selling anything. She would just talk about God as if she knew Him, as if she'd talked to Him on the phone that day. She said, you know, some Christians I've encountered, they felt like they needed to sell God, like He was soap or a vacuum cleaner. Or it really felt like they were never listening to me. They didn't care. They just wanted me to buy their product. But Nadine made me feel like if I met Jesus, He would actually like me. I can't explain how freeing that was, that if I met Jesus, he would like me. Sure, there were people he loved and people that he got mad at, but I kept always identifying with the people that he got mad at before, until she told me this. Now, I'm identifying with the people that he loved, because I'm realizing that all the people that he loved were the broken people. They were the kind of people who were tired of life and wanted to be done with it. They were the desperate people, the outcasts and the pagans. Those were the ones that Jesus loved. Nadine said, those were the ones that Jesus loved. She made me feel like if I met Jesus, he would really like me. How hard is that for us to tell our family members, our friends, our coworkers, Jesus would really like you. Jesus would really like to spend time with you. I mean, I hope we can agree he would, right? I mean, we know, we believe that Jesus Christ loved your friends so much that he died on a cross for them. So how much do we love them? Let's pray together.